Lettuce with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, and welcome to episode number 142 of the Robots Podcast. I am Jana, and today we follow on from our last episode on future dairy with another episode that forms part of our focus series on agricultural robotics. But first, let's find out what's been happening lately in robotics. It's a very busy season for robotics. Just after our last podcast, Evan Ackerman of IEEE Spectrum's Automaton blog broke the story on the UBR1 from Unbounded Robotics, which he terms the final spin-off from Willow Garage. Except for having only one arm, the UBR1 somewhat resembles the PR2, but at a starting price of $35,000, only one-tenth the price of the PR2, it may prove far more successful in the marketplace. More recently, RoboStocks LLC, the world's first exchange-traded fund to focus on the stock of robotics companies, launched on October 23rd at $25 per share. First day volume was 225,000 shares. While it is traded on Nasdaq, 62% of the fund's portfolio is invested in companies based outside of the US, with operations in 15 countries around the world. That portfolio is managed using an algorithm called the RoboStocks Global Robotics and Automation Index. Opening on the same day, the Robo Business Conference in Silicon Valley brought together an assortment of stakeholders to discuss what's trending and what's pending in the real-world business of robotics. A couple of key takeaways from the RoboHub coverage of the event. First, robotics is now being considered as a consumer electronics segment. And second, hardware is not as important to consumer electronics as many other disciplines, especially software, community, and marketing. On the following day, October 24th, three more robotics events opened, with a two-day Robotics Expo in Moscow running concurrently with and followed by Robot World 2013, a four-day exhibition, contest, and conference all in one. Robot World is held in conjunction with ISR 2013, the International Symposium on Robotics, which is a yearly event of the International Federation of Robotics, this year held in Korea. The theme of ISR 2013 was human-robot coexistence, the harmonious integration of robots and human beings. Finally, RoboHub.org has opened a focus series on agricultural robotics, including early contributions from Chris Anderson of 3D Robotics and Joseph Jones of Harvest Automation, with more to come. And that's it for the news. Jorge Herrod is acting CEO of California-based startup company Blue River Technologies, which aims to make farming more responsible and sustainable through robotics. The company's first product addresses the problem of yield in lettuce farming, which is especially important as lettuce is California's number one vegetable crop. The Lettuce Bot, Blue River's answer to the problem, is a precision thinning device to maximize stand count and ultimately yield. Our interviewer Sabine spoke to Jorge about the Lettuce Bot and the potential of robotic farming.
Hi Jorge, welcome to Robots.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, and you?
I'm doing good.
Okay, can you start by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yes, I'm Jorge Herrod. I'm the CEO and one of the founders of Blue River Technology. We're a company that is doing robotics applied to agriculture. We use computer vision and machine learning techniques, and we apply that to agriculture.
How did it all get started?
Oh, it was It was about 3 years ago. I was going to Stanford to an executive program called the Sloan Program, an MBA, basically an executive MBA program. And I was looking for what to do next. I had a pretty long career. Had been about 14, 15 years working at Trimble Navigation, bringing agriculture and technology together. We were doing automatic guidance vehicles. We were doing variable rate application of nitrogen and looking at plants with NDVI sensors and doing yield monitoring. Anyhow, things that are pretty advanced for agriculture. And what we decided to do, what I decided to do after that is take a little bit of a stop from there, go and work on my business side skills, and go to Stanford and see if I could find a good idea for a startup, and see if I could find a team, and see if I could find money to fund these. And I was able to do all that in this year, in 2011. I met up with a great co-founder. He was studying robotics and computer vision at Stanford in the PhD program. He was anyhow very enthusiastic about automation, and we found a great idea to apply this in. And we also found investors that were interested in giving us money. So anyhow, after the year at Stanford was done for me, decided to quit my company, my old company, Trimble Navigation, and start Blue River together with this other gentleman. His name is Lee Redden.
Tell us more about the idea behind Blue River Technology.
The idea for the technology came from, again, looking for what is next in agriculture and technology. I really like the space. I really liked the idea of precision agriculture, which is about, instead of trying to make decisions in a field-by-field basis, precision agriculture is about using data that is available and that is all geocoded, because you have a GPS in your tractor, and you know where, for example, NDVI is higher. Or you can know which sections of your field have higher yields, lower yields. So you can do things. You can vary seed populations. You can vary nitrogen applications. But that seemed to me pretty crude. It's a great first step. But I was trying to figure out what the next few steps would be. And what I believe the next few steps are going to lead to is looking at plants in an individual basis. Instead of looking at fields or sections of a field and see what's going on, we look at plants. And we started discovering that there's a lot of things that can be done when you look at plants individually. And anyhow, that's how Blue River got started.
I guess we can dive into a concrete example of this idea with LettuceBot. Can you tell us what this robot is? You know, what does it look like? What are its sensors and actuators?
Yeah, perfect. So we decided to take a very practical approach on this. The application of looking at individual plants could take us in many, many directions. And we started finding and listing several of them. So we decided to be very practical and just take a just take one. So we decided to go after an application called lettuce thinning. Lettuce thinning is an application that is done quite a bit here in California, where we're based. So that means it's easy for us to test. It's also done uses a lot of labor, and labor is very, very unavailable. It's getting harder and harder to find people that do this job. And anyhow, there was a lot of pull from the market. They wanted a solution for this. They wanted an automated solution. So we decided to work on this problem. And we thought it was pretty easy, because lettuce thinning involves a very structured environment that makes it easy. So we built this system, this robot big picture, as simple as we could get it. Right? We wanted to get started. We wanted not to tackle the hardest problem, but wanted to tackle the simplest problem where we could prove and develop our technology. So this robot is what is called an implement. It's pulled behind a tractor. There's still a tractor driver. The tractor provides it with power. The tractor provides it with navigation. There's a tractor driver. Right, it provides it with navigation. It provides us with propulsion. It also has the tractor has a huge engine, and so we can have all the power we want. So it really makes the problems easier by not having to deal with navigation. And this implement is just like any other implement in agriculture. Other implements are, for example, planters, sprayers, cultivators. So it just hooks to the back of a tractor, like any regular implement in agriculture. And what we do is we look at plants, and we select which plants are the best ones, and we kill some plants, and we leave others. That's what thinning is about. Thinning is about killing plants that are too close to each other to give a space for the other ones to thrive. This is a very, very important operation in lettuce, and we can do it much, much faster than a human can, and we can do it do it in an optimized way where we take into consideration multiple parameters versus humans normally just take space into account, which is leaves a lot of value not being taken into account.
And this is done with vision. I imagine vision is a difficult problem to solve. Tell us a bit, you know, what that implies in the case of lettuce. What do you need to process?
Perfect, yes. So what we do is we have a camera that looks down at the plant. Vision and robotics have been used in factory environments for many years. If you think about your phone, your computer, your car, they were all built by machines that have this ability to look at things and weld, place ICs, move things. Anyhow, and they do it with sensors, cameras, and small actuators. What we're doing is something similar, but we're doing it for the outdoors. So we have a camera that looks at things from above. If you think about it, a lettuce field, for that matter, any agricultural field has a lot of similarities with a factory. Things are not as uniform, right? Chips are very consistent. Lettuce is being biological beings. They're all a little bit different, but fundamentally they're placed in rows. They're one each after another. They're fairly consistent. All planted in the same day. So there's a lot of consistency. It's not quite to the level of a factory, but it's very consistent. And what we do is we look at these with a camera, and then we eliminate some of the plants by using a localized spray. We use fertilizer. Fertilizer is normally good for plants, but we put it on top of the leaves we want to eliminate, and those plants die, and we put it up next to the plants we want to keep, so that fertilizer also feeds the plant. So what we're doing is we're doing a precision fertilization step that also helps control the thinning, controls the plants that are not wanted.
Why did you go for lettuce?
So we selected lettuce because it's for several reasons. One of them is that it's a crop that is pretty close to us. We believe that this line of robotics and agriculture was going to require a place where agriculture and great technology coexisted, and we liked our location here in the Bay Area, next to Stanford, very close to Berkeley, UC Davis, which is a really great agricultural school, anyhow, another great school. So we've had the technology part nailed down, and we were looking for, okay, what is a good crop to find to do, given that we're here. It turns out that California is also the number one agricultural state in the United States. It produces the most revenue in agriculture, and it turns out that number one crop for California is lettuce. Lettuce is, in addition, grown year round. That means that they're thinning lettuce every single day of the year somewhere here in California, which is a great advantage if you're doing something. Most of agriculture is very cyclical, very seasonal. So lettuce is a very unique crop in that it's not. And so anyhow, that's combinations of closeness, large market, and year-round make it very, very attractive.
Definitely sounds like a good target. Have you deployed the lettuce bot yet on farms?
Yeah, we have. We have two machines that we've been operating in farms almost nonstop. They're doing really well, and we're building more. We're building a third one is about to be deployed, and a fourth one is in the plans that has some new features. We're very happy with how it's going, and and especially by the response of customers. Customers really like it. It's a combination of being affordable. We charge the same as their regular operations. And we deliver better results. We're very consistent and use this many more criteria in order to select plants, which is great, and it can help impact yields positively.
Maybe walk us through what a typical deployment looks like. Do you arrive on the farm and you do this once per month, or the robot goes through every day, or how is it used? I have no idea how farming works, so it's kind of a foreign concept for me.
As an aside, one of the things that we found very appealing is that technology and agriculture haven't been mixing enough. And I was lucky to be in one of the places at Trimble where technology and agriculture were mixing. And again, did that for about 10 years. I was the head of engineering for Trimble Agriculture. I was head of the Precision Agriculture Group, and one of the insights that I was able to get there is that there's a lot of opportunity for technology, and most people, just like you said, have no idea what happens in agriculture. Agriculture and urban living, which is what's happening in the world, and where most roboticists are, and where most technology people are just not mixing for very good reasons, right? You cannot have cities and farms easily in the same location. So it's a very foreign agriculture is very foreign to many people, and that's what made it really attractive to me. I had a little bit of that background in both, and it allowed us to build that as a starting point. So how does letter thinning works once per growing cycle. There's about 300,000 acres of the lettuce in the U.S. and it's a this operation thinning is done once per growing cycle. A typical growing cycle has about 3 months. So if you have a farm, it is normally what happens is you grow multiple crops throughout the year, especially in California where the weather is so good. You can have two, if not three, lettuce growing cycles per year, and you can even put some other crops in between. Broccoli and cauliflower and celery are all our intercrop with lettuce. So we come, and the farmer normally uses human labor to do this operation. So instead of using human labor, they call us. This human labor is, for the most part, is part of a service that they call and they schedule, and they come to the field and they thin. What they do instead is they call us, so we come and thin the fields. And when we're doing that, we use this better algorithms, better criteria to select the best lettuce, and we increase the yield. So it's no big change from their whole process. This fits into something they're doing. They don't have to change the way they grow lettuce or anything in order to utilize us. So it's one of the things we like is we fit very nicely into their problem.
I see. So it's a service. It's not that farmers will be buying the robot. It's that you'll be able to deploy it in farms across California.
Correct. It's not a sale, and this way it fits again very very naturally into their system. This also allows us has several advantages. It allows us to control the quality of the work we do. That means that if for whatever reason we're not doing a good job, we can see it, we can look at it, we can adjust it, we can fix it, we can make it better, and we continue to improve very quickly. And also makes it less risky on the part of the farmer. That means that instead of having to make, I don't know, $1 million decision to buy this thing or not, they can the risk they can take is very small. If they want, we can do just a little portion of a field, and they can see, oh, yeah, this is doing a good job, or no, if for whatever reason they don't like it, they can pass on it. Obviously, after we go and do a demo, everybody likes it, so it works really well for us.
I imagine that you're still facing some bottlenecks to make this really mainstream, and maybe robotics and agriculture in general. What are some of these bottlenecks?
Bottlenecks. So the most important thing for a startup, we're a startup with 15 people. The most important thing that a startup needs to do is hire tremendous quality of people. So one of the challenges we always have is finding this outstanding people. We have out of the 15, we have most of our employees are technologists. We have also a few operators, people that came from the agriculture side, from companies such as John Deere, and we have an agronomist. But anyhow, finding talent is probably always the a bottleneck. Finding this great talent that is interested in the problems we're solving and is passionate about solving them. In particular, right now we're hiring another computer vision person. We have about 3 PhDs in the company, and anyhow, we would like to have another scientist to come and help. The problem of identifying plants is a pretty complicated one, and it's a pretty fun one. And especially as we move from crop to crop, we want to graduate from lettuce and go to other crops. This computer vision is going to be more and more of a bottleneck, and anyhow, one that we're actively plugging.
That's a great point. You guys have done a great job at expanding Blue River Technology, and I just was wondering if you had any other tips for budding entrepreneurs, because you do this pretty rapidly.
Yes, tips for entrepreneurs. I have plenty. Let me tell you this one that is probably the main one I have, is being authentic. What that means is the reason that we pick agriculture and we pick robots for agriculture is both me and my co-founder had a pretty good, strong backgrounds in agriculture. We had been working on this space for a while, and we had been my co-founder's family farms in Nebraska, so he grew up around farms, and my background was at Trimble. My family also has a farming background, although was not very directly involved on the farming operations. But anyhow, was very frequently at farms. Then afterwards, I worked, as I was saying, at Trimble Navigation for about 15 years. I was in agriculture and technology, so it just makes sense to go and try to build something that we've been exposed to, right? Having the right background to build a company, we felt that we had the right background to build a company like this. We had the technology side, the business side, the farming side, and I think it makes it a lot easier if you're doing something that feels authentic to you, something that uses your expertise and your interests. You're going to have a much higher chance of success than if we had, I don't know, me and my co-founders that might be very bright for this idea. It would have been probably a total disaster if we had been going after, I don't know, on social media application or some other use of technology that wasn't as authentic to us. So being authentic is what I recommend.
That's a good point. What are your next steps at Blue River Technology? You hinted at things like other crops. What's in the pipeline?
So moving from there's two things two possible routes that we're evaluating. One is doing other applications in lettuce, there's many other areas where lots of labor is used. Growing lettuce is a very intensive labor intensive crop. So there's things such as harvesting. There's many other vegetables that get harvested too, that we could also move into. A lot of this is done hand harvesting because things are delicate. There's harvesting of, I don't know, lettuce, of strawberries, of all sorts of delicate things, tomatoes that go into the farm, into the market. They all are hand harvested. And it's a very just repetitive task that is perfect for a robot, right? It's just recognizing, grabbing, and putting it in somewhere. It's a test that I'm sure will someday be automated. So anyhow, it's a very interesting problem. Another one is move to different crops. Leave lettuce and go after other crops. And And anyhow, we have a big list of crops we would like to attack next.
So some people will be wondering, if you've thought about the jobs that these robots might be replacing, what answer would you give to that?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these jobs are very hard to do. Humans have had a long history of thinking about what the role of a robot is. Robots in factories, robots in all sorts of applications are doing things that usually were done by humans. My feeling is that that's a reality of the world progressing. Right, when you create something new, when you advance technology, you need more people at the forefront, and creates a shift, something that moves together. A lot of people that were doing the simple jobs now can graduate to do more complicated jobs. If you think in the particular case of agriculture, we're going after this problem that I was telling you was very simple, lettuce thinning. A lot of these people can graduate into more complicated tasks, such as harvesting, and then from harvesting they can graduate to other even more complicated jobs. And that's the way that industry progresses. That's the way that the world progresses. It used to be before the invention of the car, a lot of people were involved on, I don't know, racing ox and racing horses so they can transport goods. But now we have cars and we have trucks. There's very, very few people that are now working on the carrying bulks by horses or by hand. It's all been replaced by better ways of doing it. And the people that were probably racing the horses to move things from one place to the other now, I don't know, work in the transportation industry. And they over years the job skills and the way that they deploy their own skills progresses. I believe that that's a good natural way for things to progress. And in our case, we're using we have several jobs opening. Again, they're more of the graduating and higher skills, such as we have tractor drivers. But hey, one of our tractor drivers used to be, for example, up to not very long working in agriculture. Digging ditches. So now this person is driving tractors. So we're helping move the economy along and helping move people to higher paying jobs where they can use more skills.
All right, final question, big picture. How will robotics change agriculture?
Oh, tremendously. Agriculture is, if you think about what I was saying before about what happened to factories, right? Virtually very few products that you have are made now that are made in factories are made now by using a lot of human labor, right? If you look at your iPhone, you look at your computer, if you look at your car, they all have heavy amounts of robotics, and this is robotics that is. Not necessarily, I don't know, very complicated robots that can do anything that look like the times of the Jetsons. It's not like that. It's simple robots. It's simple robots that do tasks over and over again. And robots have taken over factories. There was an article in The Economist not too long ago on how robots are starting to be reshored, coming back to the U.S., from low labor cost places because of robots are enabling that. It's a huge shift on mentality. It's a huge shift on capabilities. And if you think about what is the next step for robots, how do they graduate? I think they graduate by going outside the factory and into other places. And what is the next thing that is large and looks like a factory? To me, the answer is simple. It's not going after the very, very complicated, unstructured problems, such as, I don't know, having a robot in your house that can do anything. It's picking problems that are very simple to solve and that are very repetitive. And I believe that agriculture just has all the same sort of problems. It's what I would call a semi-structured problem, right? A factory would be a structured, going after homes or or driving the streets would be unstructured, which is very, very hard. Agriculture is semi-structured, where you have lots of structure, you have lots of plants that are very, very similar. However, they're not exactly alike. They're biological beings. Every plant is a little bit different from the next plant. And you cannot have you have the ability to do something over and over again, which is the perfect thing to design a robot to do.
Thanks, Jorge, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And that's the end of today's episode. If you wish to learn more about robots in agriculture, take a look at other items within our agricultural series on our website at robotspodcast.com or visit robohub.org. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Letters with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.